6:30, April 8th, at the Oceana Community Services District. Celia, can I ask you for a roll call, please?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. And Karen, can you lead us in a flag salute tonight?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. How about if we start off with an agenda review? Does anybody have anything they'd like to add or delete from the agenda tonight?
I don't.
No. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
I just have a quick question, though. Is on item 10A, the appeal by Greg Petico, I don't know if I've said that correctly, is he here this evening? Do you know, Mr. Ogren?
I do not believe that he is. And Celia, you had a conversation with him, and it's my understanding that he was not intending on showing up. He thought he was going to maybe send us an email, but he did not do that either. Okay.
Okay, so why don't we take that off the agenda?
That's what was going to be my...
Well, why don't we take action?
Yeah, in case he shows up, and then your board can still take action when it is on the agenda.
All right, that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, great. Let's leave it there.
We'll leave it there then. Then I have no recommendations here.
Okay, so I'll entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 5-0. Okay. Let's start off with public comments that are items that are not on the agenda tonight. I have two in front of me. Ms. Elena Reynolds.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to be here.
Sure.
I own the home at 544 Honolulu Avenue in Oceano, and we have worked very hard regularly to not use a lot of water. In the last 8 months, we've averaged 2 units per month or less. A couple times we were up to 3.5. And I've suggested in the past that they reward the people using so few. Right now we're in a major drought, as everyone knows, and the people that are consciously using less, we're still getting billed for 6. And when I'm talking to my renters, you know, I can't say because I'm going to get penalized if we go over 6 because it's minimal. So I'd really like you guys to consider, since we're in a drought, the people that are using excess, I understand that, and we did have a little leak recently and used 2.5 times more than we've used, but again, it's not worth the work to save $8, they said. So I just really like you guys to look at the people that are making the efforts. We didn't plant flowers or a little garden. The people know to take shorter showers. This is actually a duplex. It's not a one person living there. So people made a lot of effort to use so little. So I'd really like you guys to look at adding that in to the regular charges, that people are rewarded in some way, some kind of little discount when they're using as little as possible. We're going to be helping the whole state as well as just our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And Mr. Bob Cardona? Is it Cardona, sir? Okay. You see the building. Thanks. Oh, yeah. And can I ask that the audience receive copies as well, please? Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah. Got two. Okay. Thanks.
Good evening. Board of Supervisors, I guess, for Oceano and the surrounding communities. What are you now, if you don't mind me asking, since you're not a city?
We're a special service district.
Very good.
We handle the water, the sewer.
Excellent. Okay, well, primarily the reason that I'm here this evening is because in the past we have had the luxury of being able to utilize this facility for a Central District Cal Association of Four-Wheel Drives meeting. We barbecue outside. We've been doing this, I think, as the letter will point out here, for a number of years. We did miss a few years, a couple of years ago, because of the dilemma that you were in here within the board. And as a result, then we went ahead and we held it on the beach, which is not near as nice as it is here in the building when it's windy and cold and everything else. So that's primarily all we're doing, is that we are asking for permission to once again utilize your building here. As a result, I think Marie is now the lady that I spoke to here in the office, I guess the new general manager, and I guess that is Mr. O'Garan. Then, of course, he was the one that was questioning, and she said she had no record of this. So I can bring up some affidavits for off and on for the last probably 12 to 14 years that we utilized it. Have never been discourteous to anybody outside, inside, or the fire department, because at one time there was a family member that was a fireman, and since then he has grown a little bit older, and I'm not sure where he's at, but we fed them all because we do the Santa Maria style barbecue during the event, and we come in just a couple of hours early. So primarily, I think Marie said to me, Bob, you'd be better off served by getting it accepted by the group here that's in charge of the structure here, and why do we need this, and what affiliation, and what good does it do, of course, Oceano as a whole. We have utilized, there is a small building down the street, I think, over here, as you taper off, there's a community services, a senior citizen building that we did use. And, of course, we did go to the hotel, one of the, I think it's the Sea Venture, one of the hotels, we utilized that as well in the past. But they get very expensive. So what we try to attempt to do here is not only do we, of course, appreciate the use of the facilities, but also in cooking the barbecue out there, of course, we donate any additional funds to the Cal Association of Four-Wheel Drive Clubs and feed anybody that's here at no cost. The letter that I've just handed out, it says the Santa Maria Four-Wheelers established in 1964. I mean, this is not a new group. This is an older, as you can tell by my gray hair. I mean, I grew up on this beach. Since my mom moved to Santa Maria, California in 1947, and all these years, besides fishing off of Avila, Shell Beach for abalone, I think this kind of gives you our history, so we're not new people that are complaining about anything other than the fact we would certainly like to continue on in the use of your building, and if there's any charge, then certainly we can take that into consideration, never been a charge in the past.
Thanks for coming up here tonight. We really appreciate it, and we'll have somebody get back to you quickly.
All right.
May I ask a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
I was just curious, did you mean the inside of the building or the parking lot use?
We bring in probably 12 to 15 clubs that come in from the Central District of California, meaning Kern, Tulare counties, and they come over here to meet because not only do they stay in the hotels and they go up to Hearst Castle, but as well some of them camp on the beach.
Okay.
So now, yes, that means we will be using the parking lot. We do barbecue out here if it's still okay. And then as well, we use this area here to hold our Central District meeting.
Okay. And is it once a year?
Once a year that we utilize your facility, and the other three times a year, since this is a quarterly event, then, of course, we'll go to Bakersfield for Kern, and we go up to Visalia normally for Tulare.
Thank you.
Wherever.
Okay.
We think our off-roading is better here.
if you look at the little print-up that we did, I think everybody loves the area. Those that come from the valley, it's
right.
No doubt, you know. We deal, you know, and it tells you a few things here. We've been on the beach long enough to where our club literally helped train your rangers that were on the beach, because in the early 70s, they didn't know anything about driving out on the beach. Mm-hmm. So as a result, they had the tendency to get on a face and maybe not power up correctly.
Right.
And as well, we did handicap cruises on the beach, where whether you were in a wheelchair, and we continued to do things like that and stay involved with the community. So the main thing is that we're not users and abusers. I think that if you go through this, you'll see that we participate in highway cleanups, adopt trails and things of that nature. So we hope that because of maybe the ill ventures as young children, whether it's littering or whatever we do when we're in our teens, that this is the payback, and that's why we are all involved still in okay. trying to make certain.
We'll get back to you
okay.
very quickly.
All right, very
is
good.
There any other anybody Can I else make that a has
comment?
Go ahead.
I've known Bob for a very long time, and I've participated in a lot of the events and things that they have, and they're very responsible. They don't create any problems. They don't leave a mess, and he's very easy to work with. And I would support this because it's one annual thing, and I know they used to do it a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I also know about the group.
Madam President, it's not on the agenda. Marie could come up and speak to her research. We didn't see anything in the district's records providing for the use of the facilities. And that's the challenge that we have right now.
Okay. So
do you remember
we
when
can
the last
address
time
it.
Was, Mr. Cordona?
Pardon me?
Do you remember when the last time? Because I think I remember this about 3 or 4 years ago that your
every
group
year
was here.
For at least 4 to 5 years we've
yeah.
been here.
Yeah, I remember here. It. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, Lori, your son, wasn't it your son that became a fireman or somebody's son that became
yeah.
a fireman over here? And we were feeding them as far
and
back as
they can eat well,
that.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Okay, so we'll save the Love Fest for the 25th.
Okay.
But
you got it.
we're going to move back to the agenda. We'll definitely get you an answer within the next 24 hours.
And
you
I
know,
appreciate that,
and,
yes.
And I think everything will be fine.
Okay, and I have a business card that I'll leave you so you have a contact information.
If you could leave it with Sally.
And thanks for coming down. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you
very much. Okay, thank you. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to speak on the agenda? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name's Diana Robertson. I'm currently a resident of Pismo Beach, but my husband and I want to downsize, so we're planning on selling that house and buying either a mobile home in a park or an RV, and we were looking at either Oceano or maybe the Los Osos Morro Bay area, but we're really concerned about this proposed railroad spur that you know is proposed by Phillips 66. So I've done a little research on the internet through the Mesa Refinery Watch group, which I think has some very well documented information, as well as reading the Tribune and other sources, and it feels like it would just be a terrible danger for this community. I don't think the community needs a whole new dirty industry like this, and it's one of the reasons, minor reason, we're leaving Pismo Beach. But if it comes down to it, I don't think we would choose Oceano to invest our money here and be residents. We just wouldn't feel safe here. We wouldn't want the exhaust, you know, the three locomotives apparently would be here, in Napomo, 8 hours a day, not so far from here, belching out their exhaust coming by here, this site. I think it would just destroy the whole character of this Central Coast, which we have really come to love. So I hope, and you're probably aware that the city of San Luis Obispo, the mayor and city council, sent a strongly worded letter to the planning department of the county planning department asking them to deny the rail. And if you folks have that same authority, I hope you'll do the due diligence and also discuss writing a similar letter, because we really want to be able to stay here and enjoy the beautiful beach and the towns, but it'll just completely change and be such a danger to people who have invested their life savings down here. I just can't imagine what could happen to the property values and even people wanting to visit here. So thank you very much.
Thank you for coming up today. And if there are others who are going to speak on this too, we don't have the authority to oversee that. Several of us have followed it very, very closely, right? But the Oceano Advisory Committee does have the authority to rally and talk about it more in depth and the impact of the area. So I would strongly encourage you. And Karen, are you on the advisory committee?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And Jen, are
fourth,
you on the advisory
fourth
committee?
Fourth Monday
So we have two board members who are on the Oceano Advisory Committee. I know that Mrs. Austin is also on the advisory committee, so it's a very active committee, and I'd strongly encourage people to talk to that committee as well.
4 o'clock, fourth Monday of the month, here. Here, right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak? Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief, okay? My name is Lawrence. I'm on the same topic.
Okay, what was your last name, sir?
My first name is Lawrence. The last Lawrence? Name is Schinderman, and I'll give you a card.
Okay.
I'm a member of the what they call the Mesa Refinery Watch Group. We're a local grassroots organization of retired and semi-retired and fairly active people in the community. We're not a bunch of hair-on-fire activists. I myself was a businessman in the tech industry for a better part of 45 years. We have attorneys, civil engineers, members of the CIA. We're not just your typical activist group. I'm here to give a little bit of a perspective on how we interpret the Phillips 66 crude by rail terminal project that's proposed for the Santa Maria refinery in Nipomo and how it could impact Oceano and the surrounding communities. Simply stated, an opposition is, if the rail project is not built, trains won't come, just like the movie. If you build it, they will come. If you don't build the refinery, the trains won't come. Towns and communities along the main line of the Union Pacific Railroad, which is just a couple of yards from here, including Oakland, San Luis Obispo, San Jose, and Santa Barbara, have stepped up and said no to this dangerous project. The reason is to stop what the press calls them, the bomb trains that will be coming through their communities. This is an issue of what has been called crude by rail roulette. The citizens of Oceano and the surrounding communities must be made aware of the terror that will be coming down the tracks should this intrusive, dangerous, and polluting rail project be built. It will be blighting the landscape, carrying a cargo of highly volatile crude oil, spewing toxic diesel emissions that the young lady just mentioned before along the entire mainline route, and putting at risk the health, safety, and welfare of the residents and visitors to Oceano. There's a 1.5 mile long, what they call bomb train, coming 5 times a week. That will be a stone's throw from the schools, restaurants, parks, houses of worship, and recreation areas, and the businesses that cater to the off-road enthusiasts in this area. Some will say the trains already come through town, and what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is the type of crude that the trains will be carrying. It's called tar sands. It's a highly viscous tar-like substance. It's extracted from Alberta oil sands. It's called the dirtiest, most toxic, and polluting crude oil there is, not only to come out of the ground, but to refine. To make it flow, a chemical has to be added. It's called a dilutant. And it lowers the flash point of this crude, and that's what makes it volatile. It's as explosive as Bakken. Bakken was originally on the first EIR. Our group, we think, will take some credit for getting it removed from the EIR. But this tar sands is as explosive as the Bakken that was originally in the EIR. Who says so? The industry trade magazine Railway Age says so, February 23, 2015. They said, the widespread belief that tar sands from Alberta's northern oil sands is far safer to transport by rail than Bakken crude is for all intents and purposes dead wrong. The chief of public safety at a town meeting in Guadalupe just a couple of weeks ago was more graphic when he stated that in the event of an explosion, and this is shocking, a shockwave and blast zone would cover 1.5 miles. We're a couple of hundred yards away. Rail cars will be launched like projectiles into the air. A debris field of shrapnel will spread 3,000 feet. An evacuation zone of over a mile will be ordered, and a black cloud of toxic soot and ash would rain down, covering homes, farmland, and businesses downwind. Visualize how this would impact the dunes, and yes, the lives and tourists, if a toxic plume was carried by the winds right here.
Are we almost?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
According to the Department of Transportation, potentially deadly oil train accidents are likely to be commonplace in the United States over the next 2 decades, with derailments expected to occur on an average of 10 times a year, costing about $4.5 billion in damage and putting a large number of lives at risk. The CDC.
Excuse me, sir. Could you hold on for 1 second? Thank you. President Lucy, you have discretion here to handle it. It seems like we're going well past 3 minutes, though. And I'd just like to say I understand that maybe members of the board and members of the public may be sympathetic to this message, but it's not within the jurisdiction of your board. And so public comment not on the agenda should be tailored to matters that you have the power to
Sir, address. Can I ask you, do you have that in writing?
Yes, I do.
Can you please give it to Celia? I promise you that we'll all get a copy and we'll get it uploaded into the record.
I did send something to Celia. A part here has...
Okay,
you have this
great.
Right now.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Lawrence.
And we really do appreciate you coming and educating us on this.
You just feel we need you to do this.
And as we go through public comment, if we could be mindful of the time that we have, although I would love to sit here all... and listen to everything. We really just don't have the time. So next person for public comment. And I ask that. No, this is for items not on the agenda. And but all as I ask you is that you please keep it to 3 minutes. That would be the best.
Let me go first, and I'll show them why what you're going to say is within their jurisdiction. Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker. And I believe the rail spur project is within your jurisdiction with respect to the district's facilities. That train track bisects your community, your sewer lines, your water lines, your fire hydrants, your facilities here at this location, a fire department, a sheriff substation, the water department. Across the street, you own the property for the depot, and up the street, you own some vacant lots. Your facilities can be affected by any accident by that project. That goes before the citizenry, the businesses. You are the stewards of the district. If a water line is damaged and you're no longer able to serve water to your community, if your fire department is called out, it's taking precedent over other pressing matters. Let me paint a very small picture, and it's a horrifying picture in my mind, that say the San Simeon earthquake of 2003 were to happen on a day the train is going through your town. At the time a train is going through your town, you have liquefaction in this town, and the tracks themselves could move, and the train will fall off. When it explodes, all first responders in the county will come to the train. They will not go to the Acorn Building in Paso Robles where people died and were trapped. They will not go where people that might be injured or hurt from the earthquake need services. So I believe this project is well within your purview with respect to the district's facilities. You as individuals should take a stance. I've seen your board take a stance against the dust rule. I saw you do it. So you can make a statement and call out what is within your purview, and that is all of the things that are on your services district, water, sewer, fire, lighting, drainage in some places. This is a volatile project, and you can say something about it and protect Oceana.
Thank you, Ms. Tackard. We'll definitely take that into consideration. But I still strongly encourage the people, the advocates for the 66, to please go to the Oceano Advisory Committee against. I don't know if anybody who's for it, but I'm against the spur and get the biggest bang, loudest voice through that entity. And a lot of people on this board sit on that board. So with that, are there anybody else who'd like to speak to public comment? Hearing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Please come up.
And I know one of the concerns you have for the community are for the people who live here and who are gainfully employed. And a number of them do work either at the refinery or are contractors who do work at the facility. I just wanted to point out the fact that regardless of whether this spur is approved or not approved, the refinery will not shut down and those jobs will not be lost. The refinery was built in the 50s by Union Oil Company, a company I had worked for years ago, and I'm familiar with the facility, and it is part and parcel of the Rodeo refinery. And in order for the crude to get to Rodeo, where the products are actually sold, this refinery takes the place of something like a heated pipeline. And there is no area where you're going to build a substitute for this refinery. So it will still be in operation. What would happen is Phelps would have to pay a little more for the crude rather than getting cheap crude from rail. That's the comment I wanted to make.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tom Ryan.
Thank you. Is there a website for the Mesa Refinery Watch Group?
Yes.
It's MesaRefineryWatch.com.
That was MesaRefineryWatch.com.
One word.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to speak under items not on the agenda under public comment tonight? Hearing none, let's move the agenda. Okay. Do we have any special presentations tonight? Okay. Reports. Sheriff's South Station? Do we have a report from the Sheriff's South Station? No? Okay. And Tony, Mr. Matarcino, you're up.
Good evening, Board. Tony Matarcino. As for the month of March, we had zero SSOs. Lopez is currently just over 19,200 acre feet, which is 38.9% full. We had 12 work orders, 4 USAs, 12 customer service calls, 3 call-out, after-hour call-outs. We're still continuing to replace the meters, the stuck meters from the meter reads we just did. We had monthly equipment checks, preventive maintenance done on all the equipment that is not utilized all the time. Finished up the SSMP. We had to replace 2 service lines in the past 2 weeks. Continuing to raise the boxes in the alleys as we're replacing these meters. And for future work coming up, the pump, column, tube, and shaft for well 8 is going to be delivered tomorrow, and then the work will be completed on well 8, hopefully Monday. It's scheduled to come out Monday to bring it, reinstall everything, and then we bring the well back online throughout the week as we disinfect it and take all our samples that we need to take.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Everything else is going pretty good.
So that's well 8, and then say that again, it might be up on.
So well 8, the pump, column, tubes, and shaft that need to be replaced can be delivered tomorrow.
Okay.
And then Monday we'll have the crew back out there to reinstall it. But as they reinstall it, we got to disinfect it and then disinfect the well. Mm-hmm. It's a few day process and then back to it, ensure everything's good to go before we bring it back online. So hopefully we'll have it back online by the end of next week.
I did note I was at the yard yesterday and well 4 was running and leaking. I don't know if you call it significantly, but it was leaking quite a bit. And obviously I don't know where you as the supervisor see that in the future repairs that we're looking at for the district. Obviously, you know, having wells that operate correctly I think is important.
Absolutely. It does leak a little excessive and it is a water-cooled well.
Okay.
The packing gland right there, it does have some age on it. Mm-hmm. And if you tighten it up, it actually affects the whole pretty motor sure. itself.
It binds.
It actually does, yes. Because right. I physically tried to do it, and you could tell it bound it up. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that is a future project. As of right now, we use that well maybe once a week. Mm-hmm. So we do minimize the use on it. Right now, concentrating on 5 and 8, but that's definitely a project that needs some attention.
All right. So I'll ask you when we're building the budget if you can give us some projection, obviously.
Yes, sir.
This is all goes to the pro forma and trying to anticipate yes. future needs. So.
Yes.
Thank
Great.
You, Tony.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And Karen, would you like to do the fire report tonight?
Yeah. Do you want me to do it now or with the committee reports?
Why don't you do it with the committee reports, if that's
okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Committee reports, Karen. I'll let you go first.
At 2:43 a.m. on April 4th, our fire people were called out to the river levee at the sewer plant, where there was a vegetation fire in a homeless camp. Mm. And to get to the fire, oh, and I should add, it was one of those kind of nights because they responded from a two-injury rollover accident on 101 southbound at Fair Oaks Avenue. And it was a real mess to clean up. They had to cut the sanitation plant fence, go in with the sanitation plant, use sanitation plant water. They had two CAL FIRE trucks, brush one from Roy Grandy Station, brush two from Grover Beach. Oceanos was already in Grover backing up engine two, which was at the rollover. They believed that somebody in one of the encampments was angry at somebody else and it was set fire. It only covered about 50 by 150 feet of thick brush and lots of debris, but it took until 6 a.m. to get it out. And it was kind of a mess, and they sent several firefighters over to the hospital to get shots for poison oak because there was poison oak and contamination and also poison oak smoke. So it was a real mess. And the question is now, you know, it's a homeless encampment up there. We've discussed it at length. It's been talked about. And now it becomes a hazard in other ways. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, it was very interesting. While I was talking to the fire chief this afternoon, at 3:10 p.m. this afternoon, there was all three fire units out on medical aids. They all responded at approximately the same time, because I could hear sirens all over at 3:10. And yesterday at 4 p.m., there was again where the fire people were dealing with three medicals. One of them, it took two units. It was a full cardiac arrest. And at that time, it came out to be a false alarm, but the fire chief and one of the other ranking officers in the station personally responded to it. Report of a traffic accident because they were the people that were left. So our fire guys are obviously earning their keep, and this is just something that's happened, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wow. So they're very busy anyway, but I just wish there was something we can do about the homeless encampments down there. Anyway. Thank you.
Yeah, that's. If the sheriff's representative was here,
I would have asked him about it.
Okay. Matt, would you like to go?
Yeah, I attended the sanitation plant, and the sanitation plant has previously discussed the homeless camp, but they're outside the fences of the sanitation plant, and there's been concerns from the workers about safety issues with the homeless camps. There's been concerns about them leaching electricity off of them. We haven't been able to find that where they're doing it, but there have been concerns, and they've been out there in the middle of the night looking for it, trying to find that. And so I think a concerted effort, maybe Mr. Ogren and Mr. Sweet could send a letter over. Obviously now the plant has been damaged by cutting the fence, and the water has been used from the plant. It might a joint letter to the sheriff's requesting some cleanup might be. This is not the first fire. Remember the one we had about a year ago that was the acre from the homeless population here in Oceano? And Oceano's not the only one with a homeless population issue. I see them in Grover. I see people in Roy Grandy and San Luis Obispo. It's a regional concern.
Well, it's become more of a situation since they cleared out by the train station in Grover Beach.
That's right.
Large
they did, right.
Populations have migrated.
There was a huge population right by the train station.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. You see what they did to that land. So.
But I did attend the sanitation plant district meeting last Wednesday. We reviewed the bylaws. It's a yearly review that we hadn't done in a couple of years. But there were some minor changes that we are going to make to the bylaws to more accurately reflect what we're doing, and a couple of concerns that came up. That'll be brought back probably next week for approval. And then we had a closed session on the Regional Water Quality Board spill. There's nothing to report at this time yet. So.
Okay, thank you. Lori, were you able to, did any of your committees meet this week?
No, I did not meet with any of them. I've been buried up to my eyebrows for the past 2.5 weeks. So, no, I didn't go to any of them. I only had the one.
Yeah. I think we did attend a fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club in town, but that was a fall understanding committee.
I thought we did that last
time. Yeah, we did that last time.
Well, was it last week?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I just got my credit card bill. That's why it's so fresh in my memory. Jen, would you like to report?
Sure. I attended the IRWM meeting on the 1st of April, where they went over grant administration for the grants that are available through the state, and changes to the disadvantaged communities definition, as well as just talking about how much was left for the Prop 84 funding. It's only $4.9 million, and for this area, which includes a bunch of different IRWM groups, and so we're looking at whether or not we have a program that's going to, or projects that will be worthy of competition, I suppose. So that's something that's going to be figured out, and I believe that's all for now.
Okay. I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee, and as well, I think I did see you in the room as well, and I'll be sitting on the Environmental Impact Report subcommittee reviewing the Leticia project again. So I should be pretty full with that task. And there was a small presentation on the drought task force activities and outlook, which I think some people were somewhat surprised that there was a task force, but there is a task force. And so, but there wasn't really much to report on that. I think the most exciting thing for me was that I sat next to a gentleman that I had never met before.
Jean-Pierre Wolf.
And I learned a little bit more about desalination, which, as being a victim, I mean, not a victim, but I've drank plenty of desal. And down in Baja, every resort has their own desalination plant. Cannot have a resort in Baja, Mexico, without your own desalination plant. So that's what you have to drink down there. And so I got some very useful information out of him, and the committee also got some very useful information out of him as well. And it was really a pleasure talking to the gentleman and exchanging information. So I also attended, I met with the Board of Supervisors this week, Thursday. We talked more about some of the issues around transient populations in Oceano. Like I'd like to point out that the Lynn Compton does come to Oceano every Thursday to meet with the residents and other citizens in the area, and you can just call her office, and I think we have a flyer up in the window, or I have a flyer that I need to print out that I can print in the window with her office hours and stuff. But she's very open to meet with people and to hear people's concerns. So and that's just about what I did.
I'm the chairperson. I have one more.
Yes, ma'am.
I also went last Thursday to the Zone 3 Tech Committee meeting. And one of the issues right now, the habitat study, the 10-year-old habitat study, is started up again, and there's a engineering firm doing a launching into a water availability study, which I thought was very interesting because there's a tremendous amount of variables in studying water availability and where it goes and who uses it and who's entitled to it, and for the Rio Grande Creek, and it's very complex. And one of the issues that came up kind of as a off-the-cuff question was, when they complete the water availability study, the question is there enough water available for all the entities that are entitled to a share of this water? You've got riparian rights and agricultural rights and the pieces that the cities and the districts own. And it just was and I got to thinking about it, it's kind of a question right now after 3-4 years of drought. Is there enough water that actually can be generated within the future out of that dam to cover all the people who own it? Anyway, and they're going back to 1969 and doing a lot of averaging, which I pointed out to somebody, for agriculture, to average from 1969 is not going to give you correct information because of all the changes in the methods in growing food here in that time, including your irrigation systems that have changed, your cropping that's changed, your markets have changed, the varieties of plants have changed, and that whether they can get their handle on that total mass of variables in actually coming up with a comprehensive plan. So I'm going to keep watching. Thank you.
That's good. Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. This is when we take items and bundle them and then pass them. So we have the warrants packets and two sets of minutes, I think. Correct, Celia? One set, and then, yeah, I'll do public comment in a minute. And then review approval of cash disbursements. Before we do that, I'll take public comment. Is there any public comment on this? Okay, hearing none. Does anybody have any questions about the consent agenda? I like the layout of the minutes.
Yeah, I do too.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Abstaining? Passes 5-0. Celia? Okay. Business items. Anybody like to speak on public comment on any of the business items that we have? 10, A, B, or C?
Good evening. My name is April McLaughlin, and I am a Five Cities resident. I am wishing to speak on the board report. Pertaining to the San Luis County, San Luis Obispo Sanitation District. I should start calling myself Paul Harvey because this is the rest of the story. Last time I was here, I did let the community know that there had been some very hateful emails that had been written to a member, an employee at the SAM District. Matt had omitted that in his report. Since then, at the last meeting, Mr. Hill has turned them in, and they were looked at by the Rio Grande Police Department, as far as I know. At the last meeting, OCSD Mary Lucy did go to the podium and speak, and she named the oversight group that has been chosen by the SAN District, which is comprised of Patty Welsh, Brad Snook, Andrea Vernier, Patricia Price, Ron Holt, Beatrice Spencer, Jeff Pynick, Mark London, and myself, April McLaughlin, as racists. These are the people that should be thanked for being involved.
Point of order. This is not on the agenda for tonight anywhere, is it?
It pertains to the report that was given.
This was not there was no oversight group that was appointed either, and she did not label those people as racist.
I'm the only one who's not allowed to speak?
If you have comments to direct in regards to the business items or on the presentations that you heard this evening, and you confine your comments to that.
Under public comment, it says reports and board of directors and outside committees should be made
by
time.
Okay, my mistake then.
So to the extent you're talking about reports that you heard tonight, that's fine.
Yeah, and it's pertaining to the Sand District. So again, at the last meeting with the Sand District, that was stated by Ms. Lucy that we were racist. Again, people that should be thanked for being involved community members were vilified and attempted to be shamed by calling them racist by association, as was said. It was stated that multiple agencies are currently and have been investigating these good people, which turned out to not be true. All that has been accomplished with this broad brushstroke of calling us racists is to, again, work to hinder progress and transparency within the Sand District while always protecting John Wallace. It bears mention that the OCSD president is the actual designated representative, but sits in the audience and speaks at the podium instead of at the dais, and the alternate sits at the dais and represents Oceano. So that's the rest of the story. Thank you.
Ms. Guyton.
Linda Austin from Oceano. Austin. And I did not attend the last meeting of the Sanitation District, but I listened to the meeting just before I came here so I would know what was said. Nowhere did Mary Lucy call anyone racist. And the word guilt by association was used, but there was no way she didn't name these people. This is just another one of their blowing everything out of proportion like they do. And I have seen many times where they have called people guilty by association with other people. So, I mean, it's just not right to come up and say that that kind of stuff went on, because it did not.
Thank you, Mrs. Austin. Mrs. Tacker.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and I too did not attend the Sanitation District meeting last week, but I did listen to the audio, as I do every time they have a meeting. And Ms. Lucy did characterize the people who were appointed to the RFP committee as associated with the South County Oversight Group, which is a group of one person who sent horrible emails to your plant manager at the Sanitation District. Something that I heard that bothered me something also at that meeting was the idea that you're going to, Mr. Guerrero, you're going to remove two people from the committee. When your board established the committee, you did not set parameters, you did not set bylaws, you did not give them boundaries of where they might live or what their qualifications were, and now you're backtracking and suggesting that I'm talking about the Sanitation District report that he omitted that portion of the meeting, Ms. Lucy. I'm allowed to do that. And I find it embarrassing that you would want to remove skilled, good-hearted volunteers for where they live. They don't live in the district. They do business in the district. Some of them grew up in the district. But you set no parameters when you appointed them to that committee. And I think it's insulting to those people that you want to remove from that committee. You're going to have a presentation on the Brown Act. I can't participate because this is my only time to speak to you, because I have to go before Mr. Minery gives the presentation. Mr. Ogren is going to give you an update on the water rate increase, and I can't participate because I have to speak now. The leaky toilet. I just say look at your own house. You have some leaks yourselves. With regard to the rate increase update, I did ask some questions last meeting about your reserves. Mr. Ogren has given you a spreadsheet based on 2012 and 2013 audited financial statements. Where is the 2014 audit? Why have we not seen it? It's April. We should have had that by now. And that would actually reflect even more deficit. I would imagine, because that has been the trend of your district.
Thank you, Ms. Thacker. Anybody else like to speak on the public comment?
I would like to correct some misstatements by Ms. Thacker and by Ms. McLaughlin. The board, the San Slo CSD board, did not appoint an oversight group. The oversight group was this group of people who sent emails that referred to themselves in the plural and had a Facebook page with a number of followers, not that many, a little more than a dozen. They sent very nasty and acerbic emails time after time, again and again, that culminated in highly inappropriate emails that were sent. There was a final email that was sent, not from one person, but from somebody who identified themselves as the group that was disbanding because one person from that group had sent these inappropriate racist emails. As far as me suggesting that two people be taken off the group, this was brought up by somebody from the group. Two people were identified, Andrea and April, were identified as living outside of the service area of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. No action was taken. This was not brought up by me, but it was brought up by somebody in the group. And I did respond shortly to it. So I would ask that the community of Oceano not be misled by those comments. And I'll leave it at that. There's no reason to relive that those issues from public comment. There were side, not business items that were taken up by the South Slo CSD. So thanks.
And just to point out, I've seen that the one of the advisory groups has changed it to the RFP group, which I think really does help.
Right. It's an RFP group. It's not an oversight. Yeah. It's not an oversight.
I think
committee.
That helps get tongue-tied.
And I can understand why people in that group are trying to distance themselves from it. But
well, yeah, and that's all people were suggesting is just to not commingle. But anyway, let's move it right along. Okay. So, next item. You were going to speak to 10A, sir?
Madam President, members of the board, your general manager, Pablo Ogren, and just real quickly, this item was continued from, it says March 18th, it actually might have been the 25th, but Mr. Petico is not here again today. The appeal... The request doesn't meet the ordinance standards, and therefore, staff recommendation is denial.
I move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Any discussion from the board?
Okay. I was the one who kind of blocked it last time to give the man a chance to plead his case if he wanted to, but the fact that he's not here tonight...
And I know that staff has had correspondence with the gentleman,
yeah.
and obviously he's comfortable. So I'll entertain a motion.
We have a motion and a second.
Oh, right. So call the question. All those in favor?
Well, we should do a roll call.
Do a roll call. It's an action item.
Yeah.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. All right. Mr. Ogren, you're so quick.
A little bit of help there. Agenda item 10B, Madam President, members of the board, is to do another status update on the water rate increase initiated on March 4th, 2015. Similar to last meeting, I have a PowerPoint presentation. It will be much shorter than the last one. But I did want to lead in with a couple of the slides from the last presentation as well, just because who may or may not be watching or following this on television when it's aired, there's a couple of upfront slides I wanted to make sure to remind everybody. So what have we accomplished so far? January was the strategic planning meeting, adopting the strategic goals for this year. February 9th, the Finance Committee met in order to go through the drought rate analysis. Your board met during a regular meeting on February 11th for a study session, back to March 2nd with the Finance Committee to review alternative rates and develop a recommendation for your board. Moving to March 4th, your board had a special meeting, which was simply for the introduction of the ordinance because much of the discussion had already occurred at the work study session. The next day, the legal notices were sent out and the different items that are included in accordance with Prop 218. Also to note that the water system rate analysis is on our website. Then upcoming now, this Saturday, April 11th, from 10 to 3 at the Oceano Depot, we'll be having an open house. We had somebody from the public comment about low water users today during items not on the agenda. And so hopefully she and others with questions about what the district's proposed actions are will show up to the open house in order to have those questions and answers. And a number of the members of staff are going to be there. And, of course, we've posted the schedule of your board's attendance, making sure that no more than two board members are there at any one time. So that's been posted onto the website as well. The special meeting then is April 20th. If that's adopted, then it goes into effect 30 days later on May 20th. And so it's the May through July billing period, which would be the first billing period that it would go into effect. And those first bills would then be due in August of 2015. These were the questions that we addressed at last meeting, and not going to go through these questions again. But just reminding everybody that at the open house, we're going to have a Q&A session. We're going to have some flyers on frequently asked questions, amongst other, as well as other information. And so, again, hopefully people will come in order to ask their questions and get answers. And then follow-up Q&A. So the three questions that I identified in the staff report is, how have the water fund financial reserves increased, decreased over the past few years? Because part of the importance of financial reserves is, do we have the money in the bank to weather storms, if you will, or droughts? Second question was, how has the Oceano's water fund financial status led to a downgrade of the credit rating for the Lopez bonds? So I'll address that question as well. And then the most recent one, and this is one where we had a little newspaper article recently in the Tribune. I was called and basically asked this question, how does the rate proposal compare to the governor's new call for 25% conservation? And so I'll be running through the new executive order associated with the drought from the governor and hitting on some of those highlights. So the first of those questions is, how have the water fund financial reserves increased, decreased over the past few years? And I'm going to put up a slide that's not going to be very readable, but there is handouts, and all the board members have the handouts. And, of course, this information will also be posted by the end of the week to the web. But essentially what this is just the two-year comparison of the most recent audited financial statements that we have. And actually, I guess I need to hand it out. I have copies available for board members. And I'll take a minute here so that we can hand those out and we can all get to this sheet. The question from Ms. Tacker was, believing that the financial situation has deteriorated since 2013, it actually improved from 2013 to 2014. The timing of the audit is that it should be, talk to the auditor today, and we would expect to see financial statements in early May. The regulatory deadline for the completion of the audit is June 30th, so we'll certainly be done there. The overall issue of the timing of the audit is that, you know, for the last 4 or 5 months of last fiscal year, the district did not have an accountant. There was a significant amount that work that I had to do after coming on board to get the books and records just in good enough shape to do an audit. I can only imagine how much of a challenge that was when the district had 3 years of audits to catch up on. But there was a significant amount of work in order to do.
It was four.
Four?
It started at three. It became four. Yeah.
So, you know, I probably completed that work around October. And then the pinch for the auditors is that once they start getting into field work, normally the public agency audits are done end of summer and fall, because many of the private companies have December 31st year ends. But the work that was necessary in order to get prepped for the audit then put the auditor into conflict with the private clients. And certainly the auditor provided us a schedule of his timing, so he's been doing his work. Again, that's anticipated to be completed then. We should get our financial statements in early May, which is, that timing is important that we adhere to that, because it's then the financial reserves that we will have on an audited financial statements, which we can now incorporate into our budget process in 2015-2016. In our current year's budget, right after I came on board, I had to do some very fast best estimates of what those reserves might be, and I think we will see significant changes to those numbers, both after the work I completed as well as through the audit. But I anticipate that those will all still show an improvement over 2013. One of the reasons why is in 2014, there was significant, around $175,000 in collections from new development on connection fees. That's not an operating revenue, but it was still revenues that came into the district, and so that was a significant increase in revenues, or unanticipated revenues, last fiscal year. The second thing that was a positive financial variable, which provided cost savings, is that both the general manager and the accountant positions were vacant for a significant period of time last, so there would have been cost savings as a result of those two variables. So I do anticipate that for fiscal year ending June 30, 2014, we would see an improvement in comparison to these 2013 numbers. But both what that shows as well as this is that the district's reserves are really dependent on those variables that are outside of normal operations. It's either we've collected a lot of more development fees than we anticipated, or there was some cost savings that were one-time cost savings. So this analysis still provides a very important update, and what it does is it shows from the two audited years that we did have that, and the question was that the June 30th, 2013 cash balance had gone down to $58,000 and a little bit more, or a decrease of about $170,000 from the prior year. When we talk about financial reserves, and what this schedule shows us, though, is that it's not just a function of cash. It's really a function of all of our working capital, which includes accounts receivable, accounts payable, prepaid expenses, and all of them together. And in the financial statements, we call that unrestricted net assets. On our budgets, we call it reserves. And so those decreased from June 30th of 2012 from $475,000 to June 30th of 2013 down to $289,000, or a decrease of about $186,000. What that is made up of is then shown on the bottom half, operating losses of about $170,000, some relatively smaller numbers associated with interest income. We have rental income, we have interest expense, and then there's other cash flows from capital and financing. There is purchases of property and equipment, which is not an expenditure, an operating expenditure, but it's an investment in fixed assets. That was over $83,000. Payment on long-term debt, again, not an expenditure, but it's a debt payment. And that was almost $75,000. And then similar to long-term debt, payment on capital leases of about $25,000. Or an overall decrease of about $333,000. Out of that decrease in $303,000, though, depreciation expense is a non-cash expenditure, so that really doesn't have any effect on your working capital. So this sheet then shows that you back that out. And then there is a minor change associated with non-operating deposits. And that's how we have then a decrease in unrestricted net assets from 2012 to 2013 of about $186,000. And I again anticipate that when the audit is done, we will see some sort of an increase from 13 to 14 for the reasons that I previously stated. But it still gets us back to the idea, the basic question is, how long could the district continue to pay its bills if the rate increase does not go through? And it would be difficult to provide assurances that we could get through the 2015-2016 year unless we had some significant cash flow from new development. And as previously mentioned, relying on new development for covering your operating expenses means that those connection fees are not being set aside for capital replacement. They're not getting set aside for infrastructure improvements. So hopefully that helps address the question of the financial reserves and how basically the downward trend cannot continue. The second question was, how has the Oceano's Water Fund financial status led to a downgrade of the credit rating for the Lopez bonds? And I think that this question came from somebody, not 100% positive, but from one of our neighboring cities who was concerned about this and how it might be impacting some of the neighboring cities. And the report came out on September 17, 2014, and it's called a Ratings Direct Report from Standard & Poor's. And there's a couple of salient quotes from within that. The first point here is that the downgrade was from an A-plus to an A. And the importance there is that the Lopez dams are still considered to be an investment quality bond. They're still good quality. They're still A-rated. A-plus is, you know, very good, but they're still an A. And at the last of that, it says the outlook is stable, which means that the credit rating agency is not anticipating that they don't see an issue that would immediately tell them that they might have an outlook of a potential downgrade in the future. They did the downgrade, and then they said it was stable. So that means that all things considered, they're not expecting to do another downgrade. Again, it's in Lopez bonds are still investment quality. Then the second quote here is, we are lowering our rating based on our updated evaluation of the credit quality of the five agencies that have capacity entitlements to the Lopez Dam project. And what they're doing is they're specifically saying, who pays for this debt at the end of the day? And it's the five agencies. There's actually two. Part of it is paid for by property taxpayers. Just over 50% of the Lopez seismic project is paid for. Everybody, you get a charge on your property tax bill. The other half, or just less than 50%, is paid through the water charges to Oceano and the other participants. And so what they're saying here is that they're looking at the creditworthiness of the five agencies as well. And sometimes it's characterized as being the weakest link analysis. And they speak to the weakest link within the body of this report, with the idea being is that the credit worthiness is no better than whoever is the weakest link. Now, they also speak to the idea that there is some assurances that each of the agencies provide in the event that one of the other agencies were to default. And they looked at that as well, although in some respects you can see that there they're relying on the county's overall credit worthiness to help out in the case of anybody in default. So they kind of weigh this weakest link evaluation together with what is the county as the wholesaler, what is their credit worthiness. But in any case, this was kind of important. Say they evaluate the five different agencies. And then to the point it's specifically on Standard & Poor comments on Oceano, FCC is, which is your fixed cost coverage. Fixed cost coverage is how much do your revenues cover your fixed costs? And so those fixed costs are what I talked about in previous meetings about a significant portion of our water fund budget is fixed costs. You know, almost two-thirds of it relates to payments to the county for Lopez Water and State Water, and those are contractual commitments. We can't cut those items through a budget-cutting process. And then we've got operating staff, and so the majority of the budget is a fixed cost budget. And so what they said is during the past 3 years for Oceano, the fixed cost coverage has been insufficient, ranging from 0.9 to 0.94. Go on to speak to the balance owed to the general fund. And then we consider the system's liquidity position to be weak based on its unrestricted cash and investments balance of just 58,000 equivalent, 10 days of operating at the end of fiscal year 2013, which we just went over in a second. So this is, that quote comes right out of the Standard & Poor's report, and it very much hits the nail on the head as to the reasons why we've been talking about the action that's necessary. So it corroborates the discussions and the water systems rate analysis.
Mr. Ogren, can I ask a question now?
Certainly.
Or would you rather me wait? Okay. On that comment where it says 0.9 to 0.94 times,
yes.
What is that supposed to be at? Or what would they prefer it to be at? Is it 1.5?
It is.
Or do you know at this time?
There's a couple of different things that are identified in the contracts on Lopez Water and State Water itself. The general industry rule is that they want to see 1.25.
1.25, okay.
Now, they use fixed cost coverage in this statement, and the 1.25 is actually a slightly different. It's your revenues over your operating expenses, not just your fixed operating expenses.
Okay.
But the idea of the 1.25% as an industry standard is that that extra 25% is what's set aside for capital infrastructure improvements and the other types of items that I previously identified as non-operating expenditures, you know, demands on cash that are non-operating. So they like to see 1.25. That's a general industry rule for water entities in order to make sure that extra 25% is available for capital improvements and debt service.
Thank you.
It's to follow up on your question also, Director Blackburn, we have covenants in our agreements for State Water and Lopez Water that say you're supposed to meet a certain amount of revenue needs. And so this rate increase where we're focusing in on the very basics for Oceano and making modifications for the drought, we should already anticipate we're not going to be at that full 1.25%.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so that's the S&P. How does the rate proposal compare to the governor's new call for 25% conservation? And on that, this is kind of interesting. Now, this one's tough to read. What I just did here, this is going to get posted to the website. So these are the two links to the governor's emergency actions. The first link provides an overview of actions over the last couple years. The second link is the most recent executive order. Again, those are on, will be on the website. If anybody just Googles, you know, California governor drought actions, mm-hmm. they're going to find this stuff pretty fast. Should say Google or any of the other search engines that are out there, I suppose. Governor's action. So on January 14th, 2014, was when Governor Brown proclaimed the state of emergency and called for 20% conservation. On April 25th, made the general plea for everybody to redouble their efforts. Meanwhile, the State Water Board is actually developing the regulations. December 22nd, an executive order extending the actions to May 31st, 2016, because whenever you declare emergency actions, you have to follow up and renew them sometimes. And then this most recent one on April 1st, 2105, I think that should be 2015, is Executive Order B-2915 and the one that is most recent. So what are some of the highlights? One of the highlights is that the governor is directing the State Water Board under the shall impose restrictions. And so this is the first time that we know of where the governor is establishing mandatory conservation or is directing the State Water Board to implement mandatory conservation in California. 25% conservation, it says through February 28, 2016, because again, there's a limitation on how far the authority exists. And I would expect as long as the drought continues, that this executive order will be continued, just like the previous one I spoke to. When I read through this, I had the question of whether that was 25% in addition to the 20% that he called for last year. It's not in addition. In fact, the language in the executive order tells the state board that the higher use areas need to conserve more than the lower use areas. On the Central Coast itself, we have the lowest, as a region, the Central Coast,
We have the lowest per capita water use in the state of California. I don't know all the reasons, but I would imagine that how hard we were hit in the last drought in the late 80s and early 90s started to really push changes, cultural changes in water use. So we definitely have some of the lowest water use in California. And as a result, the action that your board initiated in the our Prop 218 process, and as I indicated to the Tribune, I feel like we are, in fact, doing what the governor is asking us to do. We need to wait for the State Water Board to come out with the new regulations. But again, this provision that says higher use areas need to conserve more than lower use is going to recognize the conservation that the Central Coast has been doing and should put our rate proposal, our drought-related rate proposal, in good standing. A couple other highlights: replacement of 50 million square feet of turf and ornamental lawns. So it appears that the state is going to provide some sort of funding in order to help accomplish it. How that happens is yet to be seen. Appliance rebate programs is also going is part of the executive order. Again, how that gets rolled out, we'll have to wait and see. Then this one, which really sort of caught my eye, I think is would catch anybody's eye here in Oceano following our rate proposal, is the State Water Board, quote, shall direct urban water suppliers to develop rate structures, surcharges, fees, and penalties to maximize water conservation. And, of course, the proposal that is in front of your board and the community is to modify the rate structure to specifically meet that targeted 20% conservation. What part of our discussions have also been is that if more is necessary, then we'll move into the surcharges, fees, and penalties phase. And so where the district is at right now is we have on the table the most significant thing that the governor was asking and what they're directing the State Water Board to do, and we need to then monitor conservation and evaluate whether or not the next phase of surcharges, fees, and penalties will be necessary. I will note that we have had a number of customers contact us and speak to others in the community that they believe are wasting water. And we have been handing out the water use restrictions that your board adopted last fall as well, and people are becoming more keen on those. I would anticipate with the State Water Board's next step that they're going to have new water resource restrictions as well, and I would anticipate that I'll be coming back to your board to update those water use restrictions that you've previously adopted by resolution. And with that, it concludes my update for this meeting, and again, I hope that we have good attendance this Saturday at the open house.
Okay, does any of the board members have any questions, Karen?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say I'm somewhat reassured that we don't have to have another 25% in savings, because I don't see in an area where our residents are already very mindful of conservation that we could save another 25%. And I was looking at Halcyon with our own little water system, saying there's no way that you could run the system and save 25%. You just have to turn it off. If there was penalties at the other end of that, like a huge fine or something.
The work associated with attaining those higher conservation levels would certainly be significant. We saw what Cambria did. They had porta potties throughout the community. They really had some pretty draconian impacts. The other thing I'd like to note is on the 20-25%, when we were working on how are we going to calculate that, it wasn't clear, but now in this executive order, the governor said in comparison to 2013, and that is the comparison that we did. So again, much of this stuff, it's strategic, but it's also common sense. And so I felt really good in seeing the governor's new executive order and recognizing how consistent it was with the actions that your board is taking.
Yeah, I asked a water official in Arroyo Grande if they were going to go draconian on lawns in that city that has lots and lots and lots of beautiful green lawns, and he said no, and I was surprised. at some point, you know, because people that have more funds available and want a green lawn are going to pay whatever price it is, but there again, you're not getting a water saving.
Right.
They aren't doing what they're doing right.
Is anybody else, Matt, do you have anything to add?
No, thank you. Thank you, Papa.
There's just two things that I'd like to point out. And every day the LA Times has been running articles on the drought, and I so appreciate it. And, and they've really tried to, you know, not just give one side of the story, but it seems like, you know, in these water wars, we're just beginning, and they are the water wars. We're just beginning to, like, take notice. Oh, really? I'm impacted by that, you know? So, but I just thought it was why it was an urban 25% reduction versus the relatively larger offenders in the state. It hit the single families, the smaller consumers who have little lawns, you know, or, you know, not the big corporations that have 50 acres of rolling green hills. And certainly there was a lot of information on Palm Springs and the beautiful green lush grasses of Palm Springs in the middle of the desert. And so there was really, you know, some of that will be caught in the urban. But the majority of the big users, I guess,
Madam President,
I've probably taken a risk saying this, but the ones who have the biggest lobbyists are holding the governor back right now.
I sort of apologize. I focus purely on the executive order as it relates to Oceano.
Oh, I know. I'm not.
There are different sections, and I didn't read them in much detail, but they address municipal and industrial uses.
Right.
They address agricultural operations in the medium and high groundwater basins, the ones that are most stressed. And some of that is not nearly as specific as it is, again, on the urban water suppliers. And that's because in California, groundwater pumping has historically been unregulated, and it was just in the 2014 session that they passed the first sweeping regulations on groundwater. So they are definitely grappling with that issue. But
they're grappling, and they have to, because ag is it drives the state. I mean, we're the seventh largest, you know, producer of the world's food, you know. Yeah. So you have to tread very lightly, and I understand that. But they did start with, you know,
we're all in it together.
I think we're the seventh largest economy. I don't know where we are for ag production. We're up there, that's for sure.
Yes, we are.
We're the seventh largest economy, so an economic collapse here is significant.
So, and then also, too, is that I also read, and please, I'm sure I'll be quoted on these statistics, but...
misquoted.
You know, misquoted, but no, I probably will misquote to begin with. But
disclaimer accepted.
There was a small article yesterday that since the drought started, there was more an increase in water use in the state of California in February than last year. You know, so it just goes to show that Google's going to water their lawn.
Yeah, well, Pismo Beach, there was a little report. Pismo Beach is having problems, and the joke was that everybody's coming over from the Central Valley to the hotels and motels in Pismo Beach to take a shower. So that they're using more water than ever before.
Well, they get the bed tax. Moving right along. Yes, ma'am. Would you like to speak? Yes, it's public comment.
Linda Austin, Oceano. I want on this open house, the Oceano Kiwanis will be there too.
Great.
And I want to make sure everybody knows that there will be free popcorn and soft drinks while you're enjoying all the other exhibits. And the depot will be open. The other rooms will be open with docents, so that if anybody there wants to look around the depot, they're more than welcome to see the depot. And then on this, the presentation that I'm really glad that Pavel gave that presentation on the Standard & Poor's credit
rating because of it's too bad our neighbor from Arroyo Grande didn't know all that information before she got up and insulted us last week, calling us bad neighbors because of our credit rating is A and not A plus. So, and then all that is all explains the whole situation. And so I just want to go on the record that I really took offense to that comment because Oceano has done very well and is doing well on our own here. And we don't need people coming from another community and calling us bad neighbors because we certainly are not. Thank you.
No, I think Oceano's been extremely diligent about being self-sustaining. And Mr. Ogren and I talked 4 years ago about how this little town had the ability to step up to the plate and diversify their water, and it's worth it, you know, and it's now paying off. What we have to watch is keeping track of every gallon of it. So, and we're doing our best trying to do that. So, but I do want to say that, you know, I think it's a great time for an open house, you know, for the community to come out and us get to know people a little bit better. And so please don't forget that on Saturday. And I really want to thank the Depot Association for lending their beautiful facilities to us. It was very kind. Moving right along. Are we ready for
10C?
Understanding the Brown Act even more?
Yes. So, Madam President, members of the board.
Where's the whip? You can just beat it into us now.
Mr. Minner, you will lead you through a discussion of the Ralph M. Brown Act. I just wanted to make the quick upfront statement about I think that for a district like Oceano, this is a great discussion to have. I know that the discussion occurred last year as well. But there are many things that we need to remind ourselves on and retrain ourselves. And, you know, the dedication for transparency and compliance with the Brown Act and all the other things that a good government needs to operate underneath. This is almost like a public training session. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to District Council.
And Mr. Minner, if I step away from the table, please don't take it personal. I'll be right back.
I understand.
We need to take a break before it's 8 o'clock.
Do we have time to take a quick break?
We do if you'd like to.
We have our undivided attention.
Absolutely, I think.
Okay. Do I have to entertain a motion or just call it?
No, you can just call it.
Break. 5 minutes, please. Start out with turning the meeting over to Mr. Minnery to bring us up to date on the Brown Act and fine-tune our skills.
Okay. Good evening, Madam President, directors of the board. We're going to go through a presentation here, and this is certainly not all-inclusive, everything you need to know about the Ralph M. Brown Act, but it is a good, does provide a good refresher and will help hit on all the salient points that we address on a daily basis. First off, lawyers always start with a disclaimer right away. Second slide, if you have any questions, this is not an all-inclusive go-to stop on the Brown Act. But if you have particular questions or concerns, please consult District Council. Well, the purpose of the Brown Act is to guarantee the public has a right to participate and attend local legislative meetings. And the intent, of course, is that meetings of the government are to be open to the public. And there's a picture there of Ralph M. Brown. I am told that the M is to assure that he's not confused with all the other Ralph Browns of 1959. And as stated by Mr. Brown, the people in electing their government officials, they do not hand over to the government officials the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. And that was his guiding motto. So just to give you an idea of where we're headed, we're going to discuss, as our in this presentation, we're going to discuss the legislative bodies that are covered by the Brown Act, meetings and what is a meeting, the agenda requirements for regular special meetings and other meetings, public access, closed session items, and what happens if there is a legal challenge based on the Brown Act. Now, the legislative bodies covered, the Brown Act covers all legislative bodies of a local agency. And so just to be, to start with the second point there, a special district like your district board here is a local agency and is covered by the Brown Act. A little trickier question gets to what is a legislative body, because this is where the Brown Act begins to have some subtle distinctions. Of course, the board of the community services district is a legislative body as defined by the Act, but there are also other committees of the board and that are created by a formal act or in other regards are also legislative bodies under the purview of the Brown Act, and even newly elected or appointed members of a covered body, even prior to being sworn in, are covered by the Brown Act in regards to their communications. Now, some bodies of the some sub-bodies of the district do not count as legislative bodies per se, and these are ad hoc advisory committees composed of less than a quorum of the board, and that is generally the case. And ad hoc committees address have limited jurisdiction in far as what they is within their purview, and they're advisory by nature. But it doesn't stand to committees that are standing committees that have continuing jurisdiction over a particular subject matter. For example, a finance committee would be a obvious example of that. Or a committee that has a fixed schedule and a formal meeting. So even if you were to say, well, this is not necessarily a standing committee, but as soon as the board fixes the meeting schedule, it does become subject to the Brown Act. Now, what is a meeting? Well, a meeting includes any gathering of the majority of the members of the legislative body, and the key phrase here is at the same time to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action upon items that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. So the key phrase here is the quorum of the board hearing, discussing, deliberating, or taking action constitutes a meeting. Now, formal meetings are easy to recognize. That's a meeting like tonight, or special meetings that are called in between regular meetings. Sometimes, not very often, a board may have an emergency meeting to deal with items that come up at the last minute that require immediate attention, and even sometimes the board can have teleconference meetings. Now, informal meetings are the types of meetings that we try to, that we definitely want to avoid, which are meetings that happen essentially accidentally or through often technology, as I will explain in detail. Regular meetings are a meeting like tonight held by at a set time and place, usually by ordinance. Our meetings are held for the interested public on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, and that is set by our district bylaws. Special meetings are meetings that could be called in between regular meetings, and the noticing for a special meeting is slightly different in that rather than the 72-hour posting of the agenda, you has a shorter time frame to allow a 24-hour noticing period, and that's just based on the nature of calling meetings in between regular meetings. Emergency meetings are rare. And these would be in situations where there is an immediate response is needed by the board to address matters of public health or safety. And it there has to be some immediate or significant peril to warrant an emergency meeting. So that is one of the more unusual type of meetings you probably will attend, and hopefully we don't. Members of the board can attend meetings by teleconference in certain situations. And the requirements for this is that the public still has to have access to telephonic locations, so they could stand there with you at the speakerphone in a public place and provide their public comment. And, of course, all votes are taken by roll call, which, based on recent changes in the last couple years in the law, generally roll call votes are taken on almost any action item. The board also can have off-site meetings in certain situations, and this would be primarily in times where the district board would have an advantage by seeing a particular physical location, inspecting real property, or visiting a certain area within the purview and jurisdiction of the body. Serial meetings is this is the type of meeting that we definitely want to avoid. This would be a meeting in violation of the Brown Act, and this occurs when board members, even under purely the best intent, board member A may talk to board member C, who talks to board member D, and so on, and even without intending to do so, may violate the Brown Act by having conversations that involve a quorum of the board. Another type of serial meeting is a hub-and-spoke meeting, and you can understand that by just considering the hub-and-spoke of a wheel. And this is when a board member or staff member on behalf of a board member may transfer thoughts and ideas and opinions of a board member to a quorum of the board. And usually you would see this type of problem occurring in the most in our everyday lives in an email. And this gets us to the concerns with email and the concerns with the reply all button in your Outlook or other email server. And that just while staff or your district council can communicate to the board and often does by email to just communicate information, it is always important that the board be aware not to hit reply all and communicate their thoughts, because once again they could then potentially violate the Brown Act by communicating their thoughts, opinions, or impressions of action items to the entire board. And I know that your general manager has a policy that he will not, I think he blind copies all board members if he does this, simply to avoid the possibility that an accidental violation of the Brown Act could occur. Now, not every gathering of the board members is a meeting. You can speak to each other. Matters not within the subject matter of the jurisdiction of the board. And so having informal conversations with staff or council, certainly those items do not rise to the level of a violation of the Brown Act, because those types of communications are simply not meetings. It's also not a meeting within the purview of the Brown Act to attend a conference that's related to the business of the agency that's open to the public. Provided that the members don't discuss among themselves items that are within the jurisdiction of the agency while in attendance. It's also not a meeting under the purview of the Brown Act for a majority of the members to attend an open and publicized meeting to address topics that are of concern to them or related to an organization other than the local agency. Once again, board members just must be aware that if they are in attendance at another meeting, that they don't communicate with each other on matters within the subject matter jurisdiction of this board. And another instance of what is not a meeting would be purely social occasions, like getting together for a Thanksgiving or other type of dinner or celebration. Moving on to the requirements of an agenda, and we're going to just kind of touch on a few bullet points, the posting requirements, how to describe items that are on the agenda, providing for public comment, how to deal with items that are not on the agenda that may come up, or the question of adding items to an agenda. Now, posting requirements of the agenda are fairly straightforward. Agenda items must be posted 72 hours before the meeting, and as of January 2012, the government recognized that most agencies have websites and now require that local agencies post agendas on the website if they do have one. And agenda descriptions don't have to be complicated. They can be very simple, just enough to give the public an idea of what the agency will be discussing. There's no requirement for staff reports or detailed descriptions of items that will come up before the board. And generally, 20 words or less is considered sufficient. Of course, for the benefit of the public, every agenda must provide a time for public comment. And public comment, of course, is for matters on the agenda, and this separate provision for matters not on the agenda to be addressed by the public. Now, items that are not on the agenda are generally not items that can be discussed by the board. And I say generally because that's not a hard and fast rule. The members of the elected body can respond to public comments. They can ask questions of clarification. They can make announcements. They can give updates on their activities, provide direction for staff, and oftentimes items that come up that are not on the agenda lead to direction to staff to bring items back on the agenda at a later date. And so at the time of meeting, or a regular meeting, a special meeting, or any other noticed meeting, as a general matter, items cannot be added to an agenda that were not posted in advance of the meeting, either in the 72 or 24-hour time period. So we can't add items to the agenda at the time we show up to the meeting unless there is an emergency to discuss a particular item, and that would be in situations that would come up rarely, but it is conceivable that something may come up even the morning before the meeting that would require an emergency situation to exist, and the board certainly can add items under those circumstances. Now we'll discuss the public's right to have public access to meetings, physical accessibilities, the right to record, and certain limits on participation. As you may guess, the public participation is of the utmost importance, and so members of the public can't have restrictions to their participation. You cannot have them register their names or provide information or complete questionnaires. So there can't be any condition that has to be met prior to attending a meeting. And meetings have to be held in facilities that are open to all people, regardless of race, religious creed, color, nationality, or any other category. And obviously, meetings must be held in places that are open and accessible to all people. And certainly, having a meeting in a place that is inaccessible to anyone with a disability is prohibited. Meeting documents are generally the agenda is the primary document that will guide the meeting for the elected legislative body. And the agenda is made available in advance. And in regards to any other materials that are provided to the board at the time of discussion, those written materials must be provided to the public at the time they are provided to the board. So there is no requirement to pass out information to the public prior to the time it is handed to members of the elected body. The public is allowed to videotape or record meetings. Of course, that's not necessary with the fine folks at AGP in attendance. The regular meetings must allow the opportunity for members of the public to speak on items within, even not on the agenda, if they're within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. And in regards to business items on the agenda, then the public will have the opportunity to speak on those items, and the Brown Act is clear that the opportunity for public comment can occur before the board considers and discusses the item or during the board's discussion. And certainly there are limits on public participation. These are, I guess, what you would recall as reasonable time and manner restrictions. Oftentimes this is a limitation on the amount of minutes public can speak. And of course, if members of the public become unruly in a way that starts to willfully interrupt the proceedings, the district does have within their authority the ability to stop a meeting and clear the room, so long as any members of the media who are simply there to record and observe are not asked to leave. Unless they were part of the disturbance. balancing the public's right to be informed and be involved and the agency's and understanding of an agency's need to have certain discussions in private, a closed session is permitted under the Brown Act. These generally concern topics such as personnel matters, usually employee matters that have an element of privacy to protect the privacy of individuals, any litigation that is ongoing for the elected, for the legislative body, real estate negotiations, and labor negotiations. And before a legislative body adjourns to closed session, they must disclose why they're going to closed session, and this can be disclosed either on the agenda itself or orally prior to going into closed session. This district tends to do both. And the public has the right, once again, to provide public comment to the board prior to the board adjourning to closed session. Following closed session, however, the legislative body must report out any action taken during the closed session, if there is any. Usually this results in a report out of no reportable action unless the board has taken some action that will in fact be reported. Very quickly, legal challenges to alleged violations of the Brown Act, and sometimes certainly there are legal challenges even if no violation occurs, but this is kind of an overview of the potential actions that a concerned citizen could take. Civil actions can be filed by any interested person to stop or prevent violations or threaten violations of the Brown Act, or even to determine the applicability of the Brown Act to past actions or potential future actions that cause a particular citizen concern. If the board has taken action and there is an allegation of a Brown Act violation, the aggrieved party must send a cure and correct. And this gives the board an opportunity to consider the allegation and potentially consider whether or not they want to cure the alleged allegation generally by, if it is an allegation that something was done in closed session that should have been done in open session, for instance, the board could simply bring the matter back and take care of that in open session. And that would be a legitimate cure. And that prevents a lawsuit from being filed against the district unnecessarily. Another civil act, another type of civil action would be a cease and desist commitment. And this is in the case that a citizen believes that there has been certain past actions taken in violation of the Brown Act to allow the district to respond to that and avoid even the potential of a lawsuit, whether founded or not. The district it's a different type of cure, but they can simply, without admitting or denying that they had done anything wrong, simply restate their unconditional commitment to the Brown Act, and to the extent there was any alleged violation, they can commit to not committing that type of violation in the future. And once again, this prevents an aggrieved party from filing a lawsuit against the legislative body. It is possible for a private party who is a prevailing party in an action alleging Brown Act violations to recover attorney's fees. Much more difficult for the legislative body to recover attorney's fees from a plaintiff unless the lawsuit was frivolous or totally lacking in merit. So it's quite a bit higher of a standard. And in conclusion, we have walked through the various perils of the Brown Act, but I think this district board understands, and your general manager and myself certainly understand, the importance of the Brown Act is to provide the most transparent government possible and allow an opportunity for all the public to participate. And this board certainly, I know, encourages members of the public to participate in the meetings. And in regards to the provisions of the Brown Act that cause some difficulty in navigating, the best solution is always prevention. And I think that having presentation like this today again is once again shows this board's commitment to do just that. And if there's any questions.
I have a quick question. If you could repeat, where it says adjournment to closed session,
mm-hmm.
It says prior to holding any closed session, the body must disclose the item or items. Did you say that it could be oral or written?
Yes.
So if it's on the agenda, then it doesn't necessarily need to be orally reported out.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But as a courtesy and as a matter of practice, this board has always done it, and I would recommend we continue doing it.
Okay. Thank you.
Until our next update, would you like these back and you can put them in the file?
We could put them in the file. You could take them home and
wallpaper.
Put next to your bed.
Study them. Wake up to the Brown Act. Go to sleep to the Brown Act.
Whatever's your pleasure.
Recycling.
Okay, thank great. You. It's a good thank presentation.
You. Thank you, great. Jeff.
Okay, moving right along.
Item number 11.
Item 11. The great sewer system management plan. It's exciting.
Pablo's been looking forward to this all day.
It's important.
It's very important.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
It is. It's...
Oh, any public comment on the sewer system management plan? The manager doesn't want to comment on it. Okay.
For my brief staff report, a couple of things. First, during Tony's operations report today.
Can I ask you what the definition of brief is?
Less than Jeff's presentation on the Brown Act.
Well,
your reputation precedes you.
I would have been done by now.
Reasonable time.
Oh. I would have been done by now.
7 minutes.
So Tony's operations report today specifically spoke to
SSO, sewer system overflows. And part of the plan then is that during the normal operations report, he will provide an update on any activity relating to this plan. Good for the public participation disclosure portion of this. There's several typos in this document. It was published before. Marie has since gone through the document, identified, and she will be correcting all of the non-substantive items before it's submitted to the regional board. I know that Director Blackburn has noted some of them, so we'll be working with her copy as well in order to make sure that all those corrections are made. I handed out and made available to the public the collection system map, which our district engineer, DPSI, has updated. That was not included in the agenda package, and so that will be needs to be added at this time. Also, and that gets added to Appendix B. And then the other comment that I have is on Figure 1, which is on your agenda, page 9 of 101, that the yellow outlined area does not appear to be inclusive of the entire Halcyon area. And so my revised recommendation will be that we will also confirm with LAFCO, our Local Agency Formation Commission, on that boundary map and make any modifications that are necessary. With those changes, the primary substantive changes from the 2010 plan relates to water quality, the executive order of 2013, which modifies the modifies the notification requirements in the event of a sewer system overflow. If one is more than 1,000 gallons and either makes contact with a surface water body or may make contact with a surface water body, then we're required to do a notification within 2 hours of becoming aware of the overflow. That notification now only goes to the California Office of Emergency Services. The reason for these changes is because under the previous regulations, we had an obligation to notify multiple different governmental agencies, and what the state found out was that there was over-communications, that too many agencies were getting notified by too many parties, and it was confusing or frustrating some of the emergency responders. And so they've gone to the simple rule that local agencies such as Oceano only notifies California Office of Emergency Services, and then they take care of the rest of the notifications. With regard to the modifications of the plan itself, there's a lot of finer things that are updated in it. But I pulled out some of the appendices relating to educational efforts because that type of material can change pretty quickly. I also incorporated by reference anything that your board otherwise acts on in an official capacity. So, for example, a five-year capital improvement program is required under the SSMP. We do not have a five-year CIP for the sewer collection system right now. The 2009 report had indicated that our sewer collection system is actually in pretty good shape. As a result, though, during your budget process every year, this plan commits to adopting a five-year CIP during your budget program every year. So that's where we will take care of that requirement is during the normal budget process and more appropriately in the budget document itself as opposed to this. And with that, I would be glad to answer any questions. Just to reiterate, my revised recommendation then will be to approve it with the inclusion of the collection system map in Appendix B and conformance of Figure 1 with the LAFCO map.
Great. Are there any directors that have any questions regarding the plan?
I don't have any question. I have a comment. I think it's a very interesting document. And I also think we should note that Paavo and Tony were able to do this without hiring an engineering firm. And I think in the past, we've had to draw on an engineering firm to do this. So we've actually been able to do it in kind of a money-saving manner.
Right. And I think on this type of a document, especially in an update, the benefit of staff going through this is it just really reinforces what we need to do on a day-by-day basis. And Having a public hearing today was because in previous meetings we noticed that we had deficiencies in compliance, and part of the regulations are public participation and input, so we've notified the public previously of some past deficiencies. We've updated the plan so that we can move forward and be in conformance, and we've held a public hearing so that everybody who wants to can come and talk about it. As a regulatory document, I think it's really important to recognize that when the regulatory agencies require us to do something like this, we have to absolutely do it. Because in the event of a sewer system overflow, if we show that we've had our document and we're complying with all of our documented requirements, that's a much better situation to be in the event that there's, you know, a problem happens, versus in the event a problem happens and a local agency doesn't have their plan properly prepared and doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's when the regulatory agencies then really come after the a local agency. So,
and that's something we don't talk about a lot, is that all the documents that we have to comply with the state of California, the county, and so on and so on. This is just one of the bigger pieces that are required by us by law to have this stuff. Let me ask you, Matt, does this document help in the performa?
I think it does. Identifying needs, maintenance, when he was talking about the CIP, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And I haven't been doing the performa, but it definitely, it all ties together, because obviously the issues that we started running into were not having the system categorized, not knowing the ages of valves, ages of pumps, the lifespan of these things. And doing the performa and figuring those out, though, as a budgetary items that all have lifespans and needs, requirements, maintenance issues, it's very critical to that. And then, obviously, as Mr. Maricino instituted a maintenance program when this district didn't have maintenance programs and
right.
stuff. This is all just
good,
you know, nuts and bolts stuff that
yeah.
we're taking care of. And so, Tony, if he ever, you know, wins the lottery and leaves us, we're going to get, you know, big hole be missing. Because
I want to reiterate my appreciation for Tony and helping
yes.
with this as well. The plan includes, you know, doing twice a year, semi-annual cleaning of all of our high maintenance areas.
Mm-hmm.
It also identifies 15 miles of the system every year that we're going to be cleaning. As we move forward and do that cleaning on those 15 miles every year, we might find that we identify more high maintenance areas.
Mm-hmm.
We also might find that the need to clean 15 miles a year isn't necessary. And so as Tony and Jason and Casey go through those efforts, and we might find that we come back and modify some of that and refine it over time.
It's a living document.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and I was thinking that we've had troubles in the past in the fog area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking this also tightens up our actions in regard to the issues of those kind of challenges. And I think that'll also help. Just it not only points out to the staff here, but maybe it'll get some action in other areas, too.
I agree. And related to that also is the idea of the laterals themselves, because during recent training that Tony, Jason, and Casey, and I think Mario might have even sat in on that training, is that the regional board staff have clarified that they expect us to report overflows, even if they're on private property, if that lateral is owned by the district. So we've had some, we know that's an item that we need to be considering down the
right.
road, but that might be a compelling reason in the future for your board to privatize those laterals. And what would it take in order to do that? Do we need to, at district expense, make sure that some of those laterals are flowing better or not? But certainly blockages in laterals can result from whether it's fog-related items or other things that get into the laterals, come from the property owner, they get stuck in the public right-of-way in the lateral, and they back up onto the private property. But we still will need to report them now as long as they are our laterals. So that's an important relationship to the FOG program as well.
Great.
I have a couple questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
Or three of them, actually. On the page, it is 35 of 101. It has the FOG permit summary. Mm-hmm. I was curious, there's a section labeled as outstanding application, and I was curious what that referred to versus standard or variance permits.
Oh.
I was wondering if they hadn't completed their application for the FOG program or what that meant.
You know, we did not, I didn't see changes in the FOG permits from the previous update to the current one. So in terms of this summary of outstanding applications, those could be things like owners' names are changing. Mm-hmm. We have one where they just simply need to reapply. So that's the kind of thing that changes pretty quickly, and I could double-check those numbers as well.
Okay. I think there's also levels of FOG-mandated. Coffee houses are different than Mexican restaurants.
Right, that's the variance.
That's the variance, yeah.
Yeah.
It says food service establishments.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll double-check on that.
Okay, thank you. My next question is in the Water Board executive thing on page 49 of 101. I was curious, it said for Category 1, if it reaches a municipal separate stormwater system, an MS4. I know there was some question as to what we were in the past. I'm wondering if you know what our status is on that.
Yeah, we do not operate a municipal separate storm sewer system.
Okay.
And basically, though, they're going to, you know, the county is responsible for stormwater within the community of Oceano. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we have an overflow that hits a gutter and starts running down the street and we can't contain that, I believe the regulators are going to say that that's in a sanitary, you know, because that's just going to be regular drain. The point being is that those sanitary storm sewer systems, they all ultimately drain to a surface water body.
Right.
So if you can't capture it and contain it before it hits there, then that's when they're saying if it reaches there, and then it says not fully captured or returned. So
okay.
Anyway.
And then my last question is, although we are only notifying county OES if it's over 1,000 gallons, right? Is it county?
State.
It is state.
State OES,
OES,
yeah.
We do still have to report lower spills, correct, in the
yes, that's
Regional
right.
Water Quality Control Board database?
That's right. There's a lot of different notifications, and that's the point that we received clarification recently on, is that even if it's on the private property at the clean out, as long as we, and if even it's only 5 gallons, or, yeah, at any quantities, as long as the district is responsible for the lateral, we have to still report those particular items.
Okay. That is all. Thank you.
Thank you. Very helpful, Jennifer. Thank you. Okay, hearing any more comments on this?
File
Do we
and
need
receive.
To take action on this item?
Yes, Does and it my recommendation.
Gets our blessing?
It's the revised staff recommendations, as I previously stated.
Okay.
Get there yet.
Are we there to make a motion?
I make a motion that we approve the 2015 update to the sewer system management plan as presented at tonight's meeting with typographical errors corrected. Does that do it?
And inclusion of the collection system map in Appendix B.
Yes.
And conformance of Figure 1 with LAFCO.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
I so move.
Do I hear a second?
No second.
Okay. Do we need a roll call vote?
Yeah.
Okay.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes.
President Lucy, prior to council describing going into closed session, I'm looking at the hour and reminding myself of, is it 9 or 9:30?
9:30.
Okay, we should be good then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, do we have any utility items?
I'm going to ring the bell.
Hearing none, do we have any public comment on items in closed session? Hearing none, we'll adjourn to closed session.
I'll read us out to closed session.
All right, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Pursuant to Government Code 54957.6, conference with labor negotiators, agency designated representatives, general manager Pavo Ogren, employee organizations, service employees, International Union 620. Closed session item 13B, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4, conference with legal counsel to determine whether to initiate litigation, number of cases 1.
Okay. On that note, we're going to adjourn to closed session. Okay. Would you like to report out of closed action,
sure.
Closed session, please?
The report out of closed session is no reportable action on both items.
Okay. Any future agenda items?
Madam President, the had a individual from public comment today who desires to use the property for apparently a nonprofit purpose. We have no rules. We found nothing. Marie looked. Nothing we could find for use of property. As a result, one thing that you might ask us to do is to put together a future agenda item that I could work on with legal counsel for a one-time use. That would probably be the easiest thing to do if you want us to pursue that, as opposed to we won't have time to put together something that's broader for if any nonprofit or if any person wants to come in and rent the property. But we would have time in order to put something quick together for a one-time use and either put that on the special meetings agenda the 20th or the regular on the 22nd.
I do believe that the date they wanted to use the property was on the 27th.
May 25th.
Okay, May 25th. Oh, it's May? It wasn't April?
April.
I think it was April 25th. So.
Can we empower the general manager to
make that decision?
To make that decision.
You don't have an agenda item right now to do so.
But it's regular operating business.
The issue being is that this is not an item on the agenda. It came up today on items not on the agenda. General manager is saying is that he doesn't have any guidelines and any district ordinances. There is no powers granted to do this anyway. So I think that what we could do, though, is we could bring this back to the board on the 20th, and you could communicate whatever desire you have on that basis, and Mr. Ogren could simply communicate to the parties that that was the intent for it to come to the board.
And that would give them enough time to...
I doubt it.
Well, the applicant would just need to know that the soonest he would have a formal answer is on the 20th. But the reason why it's not a normal operating issue is because it has nothing to do with the operations of our water or our sewer or our lighting district. So,
but we have let other groups use the room that had no significance. Ties to the organization, but
it's my understanding that that's right. That like many of the actions of general managers in the past, they weren't necessarily in conformance with adopted ordinances. So again, the two different options are: is to develop a one-time use permit, bring that back. another option would be to bring back an item on the 20th that would authorize me to approve a one-time use permit within certain parameters that we would then develop.
What would be the best way to go here?
Well, or we could just...
Could you communicate to the gentleman that he don't really foresee any problems, but we have to cover all the legalities because it is a ratepayer's building?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to anticipate what your board's vote might be.
Okay.
So.
Well, maybe we should just tell him we're sorry that because we have no, we can't do it in a timely manner. I mean, he's only going to have 5 days if we reject it.
And so I think that's his risk. You know, I can talk to him about what our timing is, and then he can decide whether he wants to continue to pursue it or to find an alternative venue.
Yeah, because there is the depot and the senior center.
And Marie referred him to both of those locations, so they may have already been booked on the 25th. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but I support putting it on the 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll do so.
And
then.
And since I've been on the board, they have been here.
Yeah, I don't think it's a complicated issue at all. It's just wanting to do it the right way.
Right. So. So on that note,
I have a question just about future agenda items, sort of. Do you know? Will we be seeing the caliber proposal for next year?
I do have it in hand. We got it this week, and so I was planning on putting it on the next regular meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Any public comment?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.